This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who loves a good book and wants to know the story behind it. Every week, I bring you interesting authors and fascinating literary agents who might inspire you to write a book if you haven't already started. At the bottom of the hour, I have a very nice guest, and we're going to be talking to her about her book, but in a minute, I am just waiting for somebody very special. So I just want to tell you to stay tuned for the bottom of the hour. The book is by Megan Whalen Turner, and it's the fifth edition of her Queen's Thief series, and she's a very interesting girl, and I really like talking to her. But I'm waiting for somebody from, I don't know where she is, probably in California, and she's up early. And it is, of course, Paula Poundstone, the author of The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. And so once we get her on the line, we will be talking to her. But meanwhile, I do want to tell everyone about a contest that's coming up called from Inkit Publishing. Inkit Publishing is a reader's choice type of project where you get picked up and become a published author. So we'll talk about that also before the end of the program. And meanwhile, I am waiting, and I see Big Ed in the control room. Everybody's always excited when Paula Poundstone is going to be on the air because, as you all know, she is famous for her comedy, not just for her comedy, but also for now her latest book, which I think you will all enjoy. And I'm just looking at Big Ed and smiling, and I'm hoping she's on. Is Paula going to be on? Okay. So wait, as we always say, and wait, don't tell me. We have to wait 2 minutes for Paula Poundstone. Now, it's worth the wait because she is funny and she is silly. And so as soon as she's available, because, you know, with somebody like Paula Poundstone, we have to wait if that's what the publicist says. So we're going to be patient and wait for her. And I'm looking forward to talking to her. She's if you want to really read a funny book, but she's talking today about the Audible version of her book. Now, not many authors actually do their own Audible versions, but of course, she's so famous and everybody knows her voice that nobody else could read her book. So it's a wonderful thing when you can do your own book if you have the right voice for it. And the other day we had Laura Joyce Moriarty, and she was talking about how to do your own book. And if you have a nice voice, indie authors can set up their own system to record and to do their own Audible version of a book. But in this case, of course, we're waiting. And I'm saying wait, because that's what we do. For Paula Poundstone, we will wait and wait. And what else can we do? Because we're waiting. I think she's probably up. And okay, we don't have to wait anymore. I think we have Paula Poundstone on the phone.
It is I.
It is you. Oh, wow, great. Oh, this is fantastic. We're going to talk about the totally unscientific study of the search for human happiness. But first, I have to ask you, did they tell you that my name is Patsy with a Z?
They didn't say the spelling.
Well, this is important. My name is Patsy with a Z, P-A-T-Z-I. All right. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because I just celebrated the second anniversary of my radio program. And
oh, cool.
I'm not a big shot like you, you know, but I'm hoping that one day one of these different radio organizations will invite me to one of these, you know, fancy events, and there you'll see me, and I'll have a big Z on my back. Well, not on my back, on my jacket, because I'm scared of needles. I would never do any inking, but
Oh, no.
And I want you to recognize me, and I want you to say, oh, my goodness. I want you to see me from across the room and say, oh, there's Patsy with a Z.
I think even without the Z, the likelihood is that I would recognize you.
Well, I hope so, because, you know, when I started this program, of course, I didn't know anything about radio when I started this program, and it really happened quite by accident. And of all the radio people in the world that I know, whose voice I know the best, of course, it's Paula Poundstone. And I was thinking, oh, wow, you know, when I started this program. As a matter of fact, at one point I thought I was almost brave enough, but I wasn't brave enough to contact you and say, you know, would you like do a little promo for me? Would you say, like, this is Paula Poundstone, and do you love books? Then listen to Joy on Paper. But I was too afraid to do that. But I want to tell you one thing. I want to tell you one thing. I am not the lawnmower radio program.
The lawnmower and the madman in the morning?
No, I don't like lawnmowers. They terrify me. I'm really scared of them. I'm always sure that they'll chop off my toes. And so I don't sell lawnmowers. Okay?
Yeah.
So you're safe on this program.
All right. Good. Thank you.
Okay. The only thing is I want you to really make this a very, very, I don't want to, you know, make you nervous or anything. I'd like you to make this a really funny program, because, you know, I don't know if there is a somewhere in this world of radio, if there's like they pick out segments that can win prizes. And
well,
I was thinking,
I'm not sure that they do prizes for just segments.
Well, I think they should. Because if you're really good, then we could win a prize together. And that would be nice, because I know last year at what we're talking about today, about the Audie Awards, last mm-hmm. year you were almost introduced as an Academy Award winner. Okay, I know you didn't, but you are, of course, the Comedian of the Year, I don't know how many years. And so I'm thinking that they should start this segment, and then if you make this really funny, we could win it together.
There's so many awards. You know, there's an award in almost every category of everything.
Well,
I recently won a Sucky for vacuuming.
Okay, that's a good one. I'll never win that. I don't vacuum.
I have 14 cats and two German Shepherd mixed dogs, and so I have to vacuum.
Well, I always wondered, I did want to ask you this personal question. I mean, for somebody who has allergies, why do you do that to yourself?
Well, I'm not allergic to cats and dogs, luckily.
Everything else.
It's still questionable to me why I have so many animals. I don't know. Just I'm an idiot, I guess. I'm hoping that someday somebody invents some great use for cat urine.
Ah.
In which case, I will be the richest person in the world.
Well, you know, talking about rich, I was wondering if, you know, did the scientific community, National Health or whatever they are, the ones in Atlanta, did they fund this research that you did for the totally unscientific study of the search for human happiness?
They did not. Not even the publisher funded it. You know, the name of my book is The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. And the premise of the book is that I did experiments doing different things that I or other people thought would make me happy. And each of the chapters is written as a science experiment with the hypothesis and the conditions and the variables, and hopefully the funniest field notes ever written. I decided to do this for a couple of different reasons. One was I am kind of a workaholic, and I thought, well, if I'm doing an activity as part of researching for a book, then I would definitely do it. But otherwise, if I just think it's something I would do for myself, sort of for a little hobby on the side, there's no way. I wouldn't be able to justify putting the time into that, given all the work there is to do. So part of me was hoping that I would come up with this idea for doing various things And the publisher would pay for it. You know, they go, oh, okay, you go do this experiment and we'll pay for, you know, we'll pay for the lessons or we'll pay for the rental car or we'll pay. And that's not what happened at all. Instead, I paid for everything. And I had a really fun sojourn. It took me 7 years to write. And the analysis part of each chapter is... because what I was really looking for wasn't whether I would enjoy doing a particular thing. The question was, what thing could I do that would leave me with a residual feeling of uplift that I could carry back into my regular life, you know, that would provide an umbrella, so to speak, to protect from the inevitable rains of one's daily life. And so the analysis part of each chapter is the story of raising my house full of kids and animals and being a stand-up comic for a living and just being stuck being me 24 hours a day.
Well, I was thinking that, you know, you could have made money maybe if you had hired somebody to be a paparazzi and take photos of you as you do some of these things that are in your book. Like, jump rope 500 times in a row?
Not anymore, but I could then.
You could then.
Yeah,
well, see,
really could.
Maybe
yeah.
They could have sold that to the National Enquirer. That would have been a nice, funny picture.
Yeah. Well, you can't really take a picture of someone doing 500.
Well, I don't know. We could have a whole page
take
across.
A picture of a person doing one towards the end. Yeah, I don't know. I pretty much fell to the floor when I completed the 500. And by the way, I fell to the floor, and the trainer said, get up. You know, and I had to ask myself at certain points, because very early on, that was the Get Fit chapter.
Yes.
And I did these grueling, grueling workouts. And I kept asking myself, because I did feel good, not in the moment while I was doing the things. It felt horrible. But afterwards, you know, when I returned to my regular life each day, I started to notice. For example, one day I was walking down the alley. I was cleaning the litter boxes. I was walking down the alley carrying trash bags full of cat waste and kitty litter, quite heavy. And all of a sudden I realized as I'm walking down towards the trash cans, I feel pretty good. And I thought, you know, it has to be the workouts, because I have carried cat litter down the alley before, and I don't remember it making me feel good. So there were things that I did that absolutely left me with that residual feeling. And some of them were just, you know, some of it was things that we know already. You know, I mean, you know, we've been told over and over again, you know, physical activity makes you feel good. The weird thing about me and about most humans, I think, is that even though I know that, I still don't do it on a regular basis. You know, it's one of the things, like, now that I finished writing the book and now that, you know, it's sort of up and running, I keep hoping that as I get more free time, I will return to working out. But, you know, why don't I prioritize that? I have no idea.
Well, one of the things that you've done in your book is you've come up with a way to measure happiness or things that make you happy. Can you explain that?
Yeah.
A little
I mean, in the introduction to the book or maybe in the early part of the book, it dawns on me that we don't even have, when one refers to happiness, we don't even have a measure of it. We don't know, you know, besides very, you know, someone may be very happy. So I decided that I would make up a scale, you know, as one has teaspoons and cups and pounds and ounces. I decided that Hep is named after an old cat of mine, my cat Hepcat. I decided that happiness would be measured in heps, and that you get something, you have an activity, and it can give you a couple of heps of happiness. And if you get 4 heps of happiness, that would be a Baloo of happiness. And yes, I had a cat named Baloo as well. And that served me throughout the book, so that I could tell the reader, you know, we had a scale of reference to know what was lots and lots of happiness and what was just a little.
Well, you know, of course, a lot of your happiness does come from your children. and the activities that you do with them. And, you know, it's funny. I was a homeschool mom for 20 years. And,
wow.
And what I love this book, but I love your other books, like Then Can We Be Friends? And Sticky Problem of the Parallelogram Pancake. I love that kind of joy in teaching children.
You know, I partnered with my high school math teacher, and we wrote three math workbooks. It's the umbrella title is Math with a Laugh, and it was one of the books is called You Can't Keep Slope Down, and one is Then Can We Be Friends, and the first one is the Sticky Problem of
Parallelogram
Pancakes. And they were fun to do. I mean, our whole premise, my math teacher, Faye, wrote she wrote the math. I wrote stories that I wrote the word problems and stories that illustrated the concepts. And it was very fun to do, actually. But part of the reason we did it was because I used to make my kids do workbooks every summer because they say that over the summer, your kid loses, by the time they start back again in the fall, they're about 6 weeks behind where they left off. So I wanted my kids to, retain some of their skills over the summer and reinforce. So I'd buy them workbooks and make them do them. And I couldn't help noticing that although there was sometimes an animated character on the cover, when you opened the book, it was just rows and rows of math problems. And I thought, well, that's a little cruel. So we wrote math books to make it a little bit more enjoyable.
Well, I think they're lots of fun. Now,
thank you.
Several things before. One thing I have to mention, because I love when publicists send me questions and stuff to ask, and I never read those questions to ask. But I do notice that your publicist put in yellow, please mention that you are going to be in Denver, Colorado on June 17th for a big concert. Concert?
Not a concert.
Yeah, at the Paramount. Yeah. And so I wanted to mention that to all of my listeners that if they're in the Denver area, they have to come and see you because you are funny.
Tell me the date again. I've forgotten it.
June 17th.
June 17th, Denver.
Okay.
Denver.
Put Great that on your calendar.
There.
But on June 1st, of course, you're going to be at the Audi Awards, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm hosting the Audi Awards.
I noticed that. I watched it last year, and you're very, 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 very good. I noticed that they don't give you any envelopes to open, so you don't have to worry about that.
No. And there was that's
a heavy responsibility, those envelopes. I don't think.
As it turns out. Yeah. Who knew?
Yeah. Who knew? Who wants to do that? And I noticed that you don't have a sidekick. You just handle the whole thing yourself, which is really great.
It's just me and the awards.
Yeah.
Really funny. I had never, I didn't even know they had Audi Awards until they asked me to do it. But it really was fun. And I do love that form. So, doing an audiobook, my kids and I listened to so many when they were little. We became sort of connoisseurs of it, and which made doing it myself even more challenging, probably, because the pressure was on. It's really a lovely way to take in a book. I was listening to one, not my own, but someone else. I was listening to a book called The Whites. I'd heard about it on the radio. In fact, the author had been interviewed, and he read his own book. And, first I bought it at the store just because I happened to be there, and I saw it. And I thought, oh, yeah, and I heard that author, blah, blah. So I bought the thing. For the beginning of my relationship with this audiobook was that I just moved it from surface to surface in my house for quite a while. And then finally one night I was doing the dishes and I put it on to listen. And I finished doing the dishes and I started looking for more dishes to do so that I could continue listening to the book. It's really a fun way to take in a book.
It is. I had not been a connoisseur of audiobooks until I listened to A Gentleman in Moscow. And once I listened to that and this remarkable voice of Nicholas Guy Smith, I just fell in love with audiobooks. Now, with your book, of course, I read your book first. And I actually, because of who you are. I thought when I was reading the book that you were already in my head, and you were reading it in my head. So when the audiobook came out and I listened to it, then I realized, when I read it and you were in my head, you were reading it much faster. But you did a great job of reading the audiobook. It's really very nice.
Oh, thank you. That's nice to hear.
Yeah. You know, of course, nobody else could do it because nobody else could get in. I mean, you're like, first of all, I usually don't, you know, interview celebrity book authors because most of them don't actually write their book. But the minute I read your book, I said, well, I know she wrote it because no ghostwriter could get into her head and write this book.
No, I wrote it.
Oh, yeah. Because if a ghostwriter tried to do it, I mean, if he got into your head, or she got into your head, she'd never get out. She'd be like completely crazy by you. Yeah. So, I mean, no, I knew you wrote it. So I said, okay, well, I will interview this one because she's actually written her book and actually done the audio. So I think it's fantastic.
Well, thank you so much. That's nice to hear.
Yeah, you know, it's wonderful to hear your voice. And, you know, as I said, I would like to make this a little bit of a funny series. So I didn't know if I should ask you if you could tell us the name of George Clooney's wife.
I don't remember the name of George Clooney's wife.
Well, that was a funny segment on... Wait.
What did that come up? George Clooney's wife?
Yeah, you have not seen that.
Was it talking about the earthquakes?
Oh no, it was talking about her name. You go to YouTube and you want a funny segment and you want to see yourself cracking up. You have everybody. I'm going to send everybody to listen to. Don't tell me.
When Peter couldn't pronounce it or something.
Yes, and you.
Oh God, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you cracked up, and I think you. You laughed for 5 minutes straight.
Sometimes on wait, don't tell me. You know. The look on Peter Sagal's face, you know, it's almost a shame that it's radio. Sometimes the look on Peter Sagal's face makes me laugh so hard. Sometimes he's, particularly in our exchanges, Peter and I, he's so baffled sometimes by what I say and do. One night, in fact, in my book, one of my chapters is the Get Organized experiment. And it ends up being, it's the only chapter that is like this in the book. It's the only experiment that is like this, which is there's actually, I'm sorry, I have allergies. There's actually Get Organized Part 1 and Get Organized Part 2. And in Part 2, I hire an organizer to come help me. And it was grueling. She did stuff like I kept my underwear in the same Foot Locker for 30 years and she moved it. It almost made my spine turn, I think. One of the things she said to me while we're going through my closet was, she said, you know, people only wear about 20% of what they own, which I thought was really interesting and, you know, helped me get rid of some more stuff. And then she says, well, if you haven't worn something in a year, you should get rid of it. Well, then we came to my pilgrim costume that originally I bought for the purposes of making a little film on YouTube. I believe it's called Gee Thanks. It's the story of the original Thanksgiving and a little film I made by myself on YouTube. And so I had this pilgrim costume. So she says, well, if I haven't worn it in a year, I have to get rid of it. So it must have been in the spring, I think, that we were doing this work together. So I go to... sorry. I go to Wait, Don't Tell Me, and I wear my pilgrim costume. And when I go to the dressing room or backstage with the others, and Peter sees me take my jacket off, and I have this pilgrim costume on. He goes, Paul, why are you wearing that? And I said, because if I don't wear it, the organizer says I have to get rid of it. And I, to this day, I don't think Peter understands that.
Yeah, well, everybody can see this segment of you laughing your head off on YouTube, which is wonderful. And as I said, I hope that you will remember my name, Patsy with a Z, P-A-T-Z-I. And maybe one day, you know, I can be invited to one of these events and I will be able to meet you. And, you know,
I think you have this idea that there are fancy radio events.
Yeah, I've heard about it.
Where you got that idea from.
I don't know. Where they serve you champagne and caviar. There aren't?
Yeah. Oh, not to the best of my knowledge, no.
Oh, maybe you haven't been invited to them.
I'm not invited. If there are fancy radio events taking place, then I can tell you that I am not invited. But, you know...
Well, if I get invited, I'll invite you.
Your own fancy radio event and invite me, and I will recognize you right away.
Okay, that's the deal. Okay, Paula, it's just been a pleasure to talk to you. And as I said, the name of my program is Joy on Paper, and you have put a lot of joy into this book, and I think it's a wonderful read, and the Audible version is fantastic. And I want to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you very much. That's nice to hear. You take care.
Okay. Bye, Paula. Okay. Well, we're going to take a commercial, and then we'll be back, and hopefully she's not sneezing anymore. Okay. We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I stayed up all night reading this book. We can say that on your behalf to media and tastemakers, but it would be silly for you to brag on your own book. When you need a champion in your corner promoting your work, JKS Communications is with you every step of the way. We take care of the details of promoting you and your book so that you can spend your time and energy focusing on what you do best. Radio and TV interviews, newspaper features, book tours, social media, video. You can do it all, and we're here to make it happen. In 12 years, we've helped more than 700 authors and 1,200 books find their fan base. Everyone at JKS Communications loves what we do, and it shows in our enthusiasm. We're going to make a great team with you. Check us out at jkscommunications.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with the Z, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper a really fantastic writer, Megan Whalen-Turner. Hi, Megan, are you there?
I am here. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Well, Megan, it is such a thrill. You know, your new book, of course, is Thick as Thieves, and it's part of the Queen's Thief. I don't know. I thought at one point it was going to be a trilogy, and I think this can go on and on and on forever.
It is. Rather than being, you know, a series in the sense that it had a start date and a finish date, and you need to start in the beginning of the book and read them all in order, it's more like a world that I have continued to visit over the past 20 years.
It's hard to believe it's 20 years. I mean,
It is hard to believe.
Because I remember when The Thief came out, and that was 20 years ago, right? Because you...
1996,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, the years have gone by. Woo! It's amazing. And, of course, at that time, you won the Newbery Award for that, right?
Newbery Honor Award.
Newbery Honor Award. Well, that you know...
That was the year E.L. Konigsberg won the Newbery. And I was one of, I think, 4 honor books.
That's right. I remember now. And it was... I remember thinking at the time, "Whoo! This is definitely a winner, because you create in this the series or whatever we want to call it, a world." And I always love when authors can create a world and bring us into this world. But in your case, this is amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Tell us about it.
You go first. I started working on this book in 1996, but I think probably the genesis of the book is a trip that I took to Greece in 1992. And I had been thinking for a while of a story that I wanted to tell, and I couldn't decide on a landscape, on a setting for it. I just knew that I didn't want it to look like Middle Earth, because, you know, back then in the last century, so many fantasy books had a tendency to look like they were set in Middle Earth, and I was looking for something different, but I didn't know exactly what until I saw Greece. And I thought, you know, this is a landscape that will be instantly familiar to a Western reader and at the same time instantly differentiable from J.R. Tolkien. And I knew that I wanted the world to look something like the ancient Mediterranean, but I wanted it to have a culture more like the Byzantine world. And I knew that I wanted to have something like the Greek gods. But instead of using those gods, I invented my own in order to have a little bit more control over how they interfered in the lives of my characters.
Well,
so that's really where The Thief began 23 years ago.
The years just have flown by. And you have produced so much. I mean, these are complex books and complex stories. And I just wonder, how are you keeping track of all of this?
Well, up until, I guess, just a couple of years ago, I kept track of all of it in my head and on assorted little snivelly bits of paper all over my study. And a couple of years back, somebody recommended an application called Scrivener, which allows me to write. Suddenly, I can start, you know, compiling every trivial thing that I find interesting into one place, which has certainly made my study look a lot better.
Well, I always tell people to use Scrivener, especially if they are doing, like, sci-fi or historical books, because it is so much easier to keep things, in place and then to be able to pull them out as you need them.
And, you know, so much of the research that I do on the books is not directed, and it's sort of maybe not the best word to call it research even. It's accumulation. I find something that I think is interesting, and I read about it, and I want to keep track of that information. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I think I probably will do something with it. And this way I can start accumulating these things electronically as well as just stacks of things in my study.
Well, now, this book is the fifth in the series, in the Queen's Thief books, right? The fifth of the Queen.
Yes, it is.
It's the fifth.
This is the fifth book I've written about these people,
and
yes.
Tell everyone a little bit, I think I'm pronouncing her name right, Atolia, Queen Atolia.
Atolia,
that's,
yes.
And tell us sort of what she is. Who is she?
Well, the Queen of Atolia appears in the very first book in The Thief, and she is the queen of a small city-state, Atolia, on the coast of something that looks a lot like the Mediterranean, and she's in a very, very difficult position. She has people around her who want to depose her, both in her own country and in neighboring countries. She has a king who would seriously like to invade and take over her entire country. And she has a problem with a young man who's a thief, who is bound and determined to steal something that she doesn't even know she has. And she doesn't appear very warm, sympathetic in the first book, and that's The Thief. In the second book, The Queen of Atolia, again, doesn't appear particularly warm or sympathetic, but like every human being, she has reasons for making the decisions that she has made. And The Queen of Atolia is an examination of what those reasons are and whether or not she's really salvageable as a human being after paying the price of making those kinds of decisions.
Well, of course, you know, you've come out with all these names for the characters, which are very, I think, very. It's very well done because they're easy. Once you get into the books, they're easy to remember. And I really like the names that you've used throughout the books.
Oh, thank you. That's very good to hear.
Well, you know, I think you base many of them on sort of Greek pattern names or Greek patterns, but somehow it adds that extra level to the stories.
Again, I wanted to have a sort of internal coherence for the world that I was creating, and that meant an internal coherence for the names that I was making, that they would all have some relationship and seem as if they all belonged to the same culture.
Now, am I pronouncing you? I wanted to know, just make sure, am I pronouncing Eugenides right?
Well, what I would say is that's how I pronounce Eugenides. But I once got into a knockdown, drag-out fight with a cousin of mine about how you pronounce the island from which to Anne of Green Gables comes. I had always pronounced an Avonolia, in spite of the fact that there is no second O in that word. It should be Avonlea, but I can only admit that now as a 51-year-old. I could not admit it as an 11-year-old. I was determined that the way you pronounced that island's name was Avonolia, no matter what my cousin said. And my stubbornness has only persisted as a writer, and I have an official platform that you get to pronounce the words any way you like, and I don't care how they're spelled. So if somebody wants to pronounce that name differently, more power to them.
Now, you know, when I get into a book, I really, you know, throw myself sort of completely into it. And with your books, they can be read actually. They don't have to be read in order at all, I don't think.
Yeah. No, I think that, that if you start with a thief, that's great. But I also see real advantages in starting with the King of Atolia, or even starting with the Queen of Atolia. Each book sort of spoils a little bit another book, but each book has its advantages. So I would say start anywhere.
Exactly. That's what I think. Now, when you're, so how long are you doing your research for a book nowadays? Do you do a lot of research?
Well, I think that everything that I learn informs what I write. And I think all of the experiences of my life really show up in what I write. So when we talk about research, I think that people should go on learning things for their whole lives, and I certainly try to do that. I don't, as I think I said before, I don't always know what I'm going to do with something that I'm learning. And maybe 2 years or 10 years down the road, I'll think, oh, well, this is a place that I can use this information that I have rattling around in the back of my head, or now on Scrivener. And I think it's important for me to sort of look back at the things that spurred my imagination and choose those things to spur the imagination of my readers.
Now, when you're writing... do you, are you a very linear person? Do you have a outline, or do you sort of just sit down and start writing?
Well, what I usually do before I even start writing is I tell the entire story to somebody, usually my husband, sometimes my children. And I pin them down like the guy in the Ancient Mariner, and they don't get to leave until I'm done. And then once I've worked it out on a real-life human being, I will sit down at the computer, and I do a sort of sketch, a rough sketch of the entire story. It's not really an outline, and it's not really a draft. It's something in between. And then once I have a rough sketch that I'm happy with, I go back to the beginning, and I write through all the way to the end.
Now, do you rewrite a lot?
Well, after I have done that first big draft, and yes, there are many more big drafts, and in those circumstances, I sometimes hop around in the manuscript. In subsequent drafts, I realize that, oh, this is going to change what happened in chapter 4, or, oh, if I rewrite this, then I also need to rewrite something else. And so later on in the process, I do bounce around on the manuscript. In the beginning, I'm trying to get from the beginning to the end, because I think for me and for a lot of writers, that's always the hardest part, to sit down and write something and get yourself all the way to the end without being distracted, without giving up, without spending 7 years working on your first chapter. It's just really important to get the whole thing down somehow, get to the end of it, and then start a revision process.
Well, speaking of first chapters, there's a first chapter in one of your books that is quite...
I think I know the one you mean.
Yes, well, I think it's the one that everybody always talks about when they read your books, and that, of course, is the Queen of Atolia, that first chapter.
Yeah.
Was that...
It's difficult to talk about my books without spoiling them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is, I think that, you know, one of the things people tend to do nowadays is they look at the Amazon and they read the little blurbs, and sometimes they make the decision on a book like that. And I'm sometimes saying, oh, wait, just if the somebody tells you the book is really good, read it, you know, because it is so it's so much fun to peel away the layers as you're reading.
This is a problem that's come up, you know, multiple times. And when I see people writing reviews on Amazon or writing reviews on Goodreads, even people who are professional reviewers who are, you know, writing for the School Library Journal, they don't want to ruin something for the reader. But it's very difficult to tell people what it is they like about a book without telling them some things that might spoil the experience. When The Sea first came out, there weren't that many Amazon reviewers. And I'm not sure Goodreads even existed. And I thought it was very interesting that that no one spoiled the book.
Yeah,
even among professional reviewers who were reviewing it for other librarians who really didn't care about spoilers at that time, they still left some of the surprises of the book for their fellow librarians to discover as they read it.
Well, I think that's nice, too, I love when people do nice reviews and exactly that. They don't spoil the story and sort of... I love to read the reviews after. I actually never read the reviews before, because I prefer to make my own judgment and then see.
I don't have that much self-discipline.
Oh, I'm really disciplined about it, because in the beginning when I, you know, had all these reviews there, and a few times I did it, I read the reviews first, and then I found that I had judged the book, and I didn't want to do that. And so I never read the reviews first. Because I want to be the one to make the, you know, have it in my mind, and then I look at the other ones and I say, ha 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 ha. I'm a better reader than you. So.
Sure. I think it's a really good idea, actually, if you have people who you trust. You know, I have friends who can put a book into my hand and say, read this, Megan, you will really like it. And that's all I need to know. And when I go online and I'm looking for a book to read, I have some reviewers who I really trust. But the problem is that when you go online because you're looking for a book, you never really know exactly what you're looking for. And it's a little bit hard to find somebody reviewing the book you actually feel like reading right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'll go to a reviewer I trust, but the book they were reviewing 6 weeks ago is the one that I really want to read right now. And so it can be, I think that the process of finding the next book to read, even for people who are really serious readers, can be a challenge.
Well, that brings me to a question I want to ask, because I'm preparing a summer reading list for my listeners, and I would like you to recommend a book, not one of your own, because I will recommend your books. As a matter of fact, okay. I'm going to put The Thief also on my summer reading list, on my webpage.
Because, oh, that would be great.
Because not just, I love the new releases, and I think Thick as Thieves is great, but I do think people should read The Thief. So I'm going to put both books side by side there on my summer reading list to recommend to people. But I wanted to know, who would you recommend? What book, if you have to pick one book that people should read this summer, what book should that be?
Oh, please, can I pick two?
No, okay, pick two.
Okay, two. I would pick The Eagle of the Night by Rosemary Sutcliffe. It's a book that's even older than The Thief. I think it was published in something like 1977. And I think that anybody who enjoys The Thief and Thick as Thieves would also really enjoy this book written, you know, not just 20 years ago, but quite possibly long before they were even born. But I think it's really important for people to make a connection to books that were written some time ago, partly because it gives us a different view, not just on, you know, Roman Britain, but on what people were thinking of in 1977. And I also think that it just opens up a whole new world of books for people if they can read things that were written 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 100 years ago. But the other book is entirely unlike my work, and that's partly why I'm recommending it. There's a science fiction book, a young adult science fiction book by a woman named Alexander Duncan called Salvage. And when I was growing up, I loved reading Andre Norton, Robert Heinlein, Gordon R. Dixon, and all of these really fabulous science fiction books. And I think there's just not that much young adult science fiction today. There's a lot of dystopia, but that's not the same thing. And I think that Alexander Duncan has written a fabulous science fiction book that reminds me of the science fiction I used to read as a kid.
Okay, well, I'm going to put that on my summer reading list, and I will make a note there that it's recommended by Megan Whalen-Turner, and that says a lot. Well, thank you very much. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Megan. I think that you're just a fabulous writer. You make a really fun world to sort of get into and get away from the real world sometimes. So I want to thank you.
Always a plus, yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so I'm sure you're going to have a fun summer reading, and then are you going on a book tour with this?
I am. I will be leaving, in fact, on Monday. I'll be going out to Los Angeles, first, I guess, to the Bay Area, up near San Francisco, and then Los Angeles and Denver, Colorado, and Salt Lake City, and a number of places in Ohio. I'll be at BookCon in New York in June. And so if anybody's interested in coming out to meet me, my appearances are all listed on my website, which is MeganWhalenTurner.org.
Okay. Well, thank you so much again, Megan, for joining us. And I will have you up on my summer book reading list, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. Happy reading.
Okay, thanks. Bye now. Okay, she's really nice. I'm going to go to a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back. And I wanted to remind everybody that you still have time. The deadline to enter the Inkit book publishing contest is May 31st. Now, if you haven't heard about Inkit, Inkit is a reader's choice type of publishing company. It's a boutique company, and in the past few years, they have published 16 books that have made it into the Amazon top 10 category in whatever genre that your book is in. And this is an opportunity. You have a book that didn't get the attention you wanted. Inkit will put the book out there with readers. And if you win with their readers, they will take the book and they will publish it, republish it. They will put in $6,000 at least toward publicizing it. They will put their entire team behind helping to ensure that the cover is perfect and that the editing has been redone and is perfect. So this is an opportunity, and it's called Inkit, I-N-K-I-T-T, Inkit. And I don't know why they put a double T on the it, but it's Inkit, I-N-K-I-T-T.com. And it's simple. You can just submit your book. They will put it out to readers, and you can select the number of readers that you want it sent out to. But also, they're looking for readers. So if you want to read books, and it's certainly a learning experience to see the books that are out there, you can also sign up to become one of their readers. And then you will have a chance to vote on books and see who wins. And hopefully you will win. So if you have a book already published and you just want to get it out there, relaunched, and get some attention and hopefully win the Inkit contest, that would be wonderful. So I suggest you go there. You still have time. We have another week before the end and before the deadline, so you can do that. And I also want to say that it's really nice that many of the books that we have talked about on this program are on the bestseller list and New York Times bestselling list. A Gentleman in Moscow is in its 26th week. All by Myself, Mary Higgins Clark's great book, is the 6th week. The Fix, of course, by Baldacci, is now in its 4th week. And I'm just thrilled that A Hillbilly Elegy is in its 44th week. Amazing. 44 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. So I just want to say bye to everyone. Remember to find your joy and share it, and say something nice to somebody today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thanks, Ed, for everything. And he's saluting me, and I salute him right back. Have a great weekend. Bye, everybody.